Anyone who thinks MapQuest mobile GPS units and turn-by-turn directions have made good old-fashioned maps obsolete isn't familiar with the Indiana General Assembly. For the state's 150 lawmakers, as well as the 9 members of Indiana's U.S. House delegation, maps are every bit as important in 2011 as they were in, say, 1911, and maybe more so. Every 10 years after the federal census, the General Assembly redraws the boundaries of the state's legislative and congressional districts, and those maps can, and often do, spell victory or defeat. I'm John Schwantes, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll revisit the always volatile topic of redistricting. Do the maps drawn by the Republican majorities in the House and Senate live up to that party's promise of straighter, simpler boundaries that ignore partisan politics and respect so-called communities of interest? Will those maps reduce the number of races that are truly competitive? And what, if anything, can Democrats do to prevent the proposed maps from taking effect as they're currently drawn? Is a court challenge inevitable? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. We collaborate with companies like Scale Computing, one of the country's most promising new companies. Scale Computing, the next generation of data storage. The idea economy is here.
For our regular viewers and listeners who keep track of such things, yes, we did devote a show to redistricting earlier this session. But hey, back then we were talking about the process of redistricting and what the new maps might look like. Now, we know. 2 weeks ago, the Republican majorities in the Indiana House and Senate unveiled their proposed maps to, as you might expect, very mixed reviews. Republicans touted the maps as the fairest, least partisan in memory, while Democrats blasted them as an attempt to maintain long-term control of the General Assembly and settle political scores. Who's right? Who's wrong? And what does it all mean for Hoosier voters? Joining me to discuss the issue are Democratic Representative John Bartlett of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of the House Elections and Apportionment Committee; Cam Savage, a Republican political strategist who ran Senator Dan Coats' general election campaign this past fall and Representative Todd Rokita's primary campaign last spring; Julia Vaughn, policy director for Common Cause Indiana; and Sam Goldstein, chairman of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion. You know, let's go back to day one of the session. In fact, let's go back to day one of last year's session. Republican leadership at that point said that if and when they had an opportunity to draw the maps, they guaranteed they would be different. Cam Savage, are these different? Did they live up to the pledge?
They did. They're different. They're better. They're far better than the maps from 10 years ago that the Democrats drew. I've submitted those to the Gerrymander Hall of Fame. These are far better than those. They take in communities of interest in a much more compact way, I think, than the previous maps. And they've really looked at improving things like not crossing school district boundaries, particularly in Lake County. That had been a problem. I think they've remedied that. So, yeah, I think this is a major step forward.
John Bartlett, I'm guessing you might have a different take on it.
And I do. I guess the maps are prettier if you're looking for pretty. But I think when you look at communities of interest, when you look at how the demographics politically run, the maps were drawn so that I believe that the Republicans could have the majority in 7 districts and the Democrats would have a majority in 2.
So not, they may be pretty, as you say,
yes,
more
yes.
shapely or
yes.
more compact, but
yes.
not necessarily fair.
That's my belief.
In your opinion. Sam Goldstein, the Libertarian Party here in Indiana was established, I think, in 1974. It has had automatic ballot access since 1994.
96.
Since 96. And yet, when it comes to redistricting, you're not just on the sidelines. This session is the way perhaps Democrats are. You're up in the stands, up in the cheap seats. Is it, as you look at the maps that have been put forth, what do you think of them first, and how frustrating is it to be a non-player, a non-factor in those decisions?
Well, as a citizen, first of all, and as a voter in the state of Indiana, I think that gerrymandering is an important practice. We live in a representative democracy, and each person should vote in a district that's compact, that represents their geographical area, without regards to political persuasion one way or the other. The old parties gerrymandered these districts in order to retain power, and that's not what a representative democracy is all about. What we would like to see, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, is an independent commission that, like in Iowa and a couple other states, basically takes a look at population figures and population densities and comes up with political maps, irregardless of any kind of political consideration whatsoever.
Again, done either by a citizen panel or with the help of maps and algorithms that basically spit it out as close to just population boundaries as one can come up with. And I do want to talk about that certainly as this discussion continues. But Julia Vaughn, you have certainly more than a passing interest in this subject. Well before the session, Common Cause Indiana and other groups, AARP, one, in fact, and League of Women Voters, another, came together to create an 11-member citizen redistricting commission to gather input, talk to people around the state, and come forth with their proposals. You did that. You went through that exercise, but again, we now have maps that in all likelihood are going to be signed by the governor and become the law of the state of Indiana. Frustrating for you.
Well, we're concerned because right now we're operating with very little information. Again, we can look at a wall map and see that some districts are more compact. But in terms of the urban areas, it's very difficult to see from a wall map exactly what districts in Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, Lake County, the other cities really look like. You know, it's very dangerous to judge a book by its cover, and it's really dangerous to draw to judge a map by shapes on a page. We think that political competition is an important part of redistricting. Ultimately, these maps are the building blocks for elections in our state for the next 10 years. And our concern, I mean, we think compactness is good, protecting communities of interest is a laudable goal as well, but ultimately, at the end of the day, we want to see more competitive races in Indiana rather than less. And our concern is, because we have asked for information from the Republicans who are in charge of this process, who have drawn the maps, and they haven't given us information as to the political breakdown of each district. I know they've said, well, we didn't take politics into consideration when we drew the maps. I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly after the fact, they have gone around to members of the General Assembly and told them, your district is 54%, your district's 57. So they know now what the political breakdowns of these districts are, and we think the people of this state need that information if they're going to judge, are these maps an improvement over the ones that have been in play over the past 10 years. We're simply operating information blind right now on these maps.
Well, this notion that it was done without paying any attention to where incumbents live, for instance, or the makeup of possible districts, is that a credible argument? I mean, is that truly what happened? I mean, can you sit here and tell us that nobody really crunched some numbers in the back room?
Well, I think there's some evidence of that, given the confusion that happened after the maps were released. You know, there were lawmakers who didn't know that they were in districts with other lawmakers, and Republicans and Democrats alike seemed to not have all those facts at hand quickly. So I think there's some evidence that those considerations in terms of incumbents weren't taken into account. You know, there are three examples where Republican legislators in the House are pitted against other Republican legislators. Now, I think there were three examples as well as Democrats versus Democrats, and those have now been changed to the amendment process.
Right, this past week, we've seen some tweaking of some of those boundaries.
Yeah, so there's certainly been some compromise in some areas where the Democrats said, look, this is important to us. Would you please move me into a different district? And I think Republicans have tried to do that. But I think it does mean that they probably weren't taking some of those things into consideration.
How about this notion that Julia Vaughn mentioned that people don't know if they're in an urban area precisely where those boundaries are? I think you can go to the law online and maybe read through, was it 64 pages, and do it that way. But there's no place you can go, and at this point anyway, and plug in your address and say it's here. Not to put you on the spot, do you know what districts you'll be in your current address?
I actually don't. I'm in Representative Summers' district today, and I don't know if that'll change. I understand that the district has changed somewhat. That is frustrating for all of us, but I think it's primarily a problem with technology. One of the interesting things about this whole redistricting process is for the first time the technology has improved and there is publicly available software that you can go and draw your own maps. You know, I've certainly done that in my spare time because I'm kind of a nerd and I like to do those things, but so have a lot of other people. And I think that has changed the process a little bit because we have many more people saying, well, this is what I would do. I think that's probably healthy for the long term, but the bottom line is everybody's going to have a different opinion. These certainly don't look like the maps I would have drawn. But I don't get a vote.
Well, let's start with, we've been talking about the process and the general perception of the maps. Let's dig right into them. And let's start with the least controversial, perhaps, and that's the congressional maps. I know it's not without controversy, but of the three, that probably is the one that enjoys broadest support across the aisle. Right now, of course, the nine members in the U.S. House from Indiana, it's a 6-3 breakdown with the Republican advantage. In all likelihood, this would steer it towards 7-2 because Joe Donnelly, who up in the second district, northern part of Indiana, lost some municipalities that were heavily Democratic,
yes.
Instead picked up portions of counties that are traditionally Republican. And it also appeared to shore up down in the ninth district, which has been something of a back-and-forth political barometer. I mean, it's switched parties numerous times in the past decade. Down in the southeastern part, or now it would be, I guess, the southern part of the state is drawn. That would help Republican Todd Young hold on to that. Democratic take on the congressional maps.
Well, I think it was, first off, let me say this. I don't have any proof, but I don't believe that the Republican maps were drawn here in the state of Indiana. Okay? I believe they were drawn in Washington, D.C. The second piece is there was some shifting to shore up some Republican districts and move some Democrats away from where they could be competitive. And I think that when everyone says that you shouldn't concern yourself with a political party, and I have to agree with Julia there, I think you have to, because you have to give the voters an opportunity to elect a representative of their choice. And I think that's one of the reasons why when we drew maps, we used townships for like communities, so we could hold that people with the communities of interest, we could hold that together.
And if these maps weren't drawn in Indianapolis, I know you say that's your supposition, you don't have proof, you find that troubling, why? The obvious, because it's done by power brokers elsewhere? Is that?
Certainly. I think the citizens of the great state of Indiana should, they elect lawmakers to go, and constitutionally, at this point, it's our job to draw these maps, and I think that we should do that.
How about that? Were these done right here in the capital of Indiana, or were these outsourced to Washington, D.C.?
That's an interesting theory, but one that I just don't agree with at all. I mean, I think, you talk to the members of Congress who had very little input on these. I've talked to several of them. They didn't have any input themselves, so surely this wasn't happening in Washington. And I think there are some examples. The 8th District, which is, a very competitive district, certainly did not get more Republican. You could argue that it got, less Republican with these maps. So I certainly don't think this is any Republican conspiracy. I mean, simply the facts don't back it up.
We could spend probably an hour on each of these maps. Let's shift to the Indiana State Senate maps, though, because those were probably, as we go up the scale of controversy, those were maybe the next level. In those maps, incumbents all hold on to their seats or no. As you mentioned, Cam Savage, there are some districts where incumbents will face incumbents. That's not the case, I don't believe, in the Senate. But there were concerns that perhaps minority representation in some areas, urban areas, Fort Wayne, for instance, Indianapolis, might be diminished. Julia Vaughn, is that a legitimate concern?
Well, I think until we get to take a closer look at these urban districts, we won't know. And that's why we've asked that the process be slowed down. The facts are that the General Assembly's only responsibility for this session is to get the congressional maps done. There were major changes made to the district, so that in and of itself is a major lift. So our call has been to do that, pass the congressional maps, then come back and allow the people of this state to really take a good look at the maps that have been drawn for House and Senate, spend some time over the summer taking public comment. I mean, there was, just a major difference in the way these maps were drawn. For example, the House Republicans said, we're going to base it on counties. The Democrats have said townships are the more appropriate building block. I don't think the people of this state have weighed in on that, but that's a very significantly different way of doing things, and I think the argument should be made for and against doing it one way or another to the people of this state and have them weigh in on what these districts should prioritize in terms of redistricting criteria.
And Sam, I want to get your take on the map, but let me just get your quick response, Republican response to this notion. Why not wait? The congressional maps are the ones that really have to be done at this point. If you did the others on, say, Organization Day in November when lawmakers reconvene, what would be the downside of that?
Well, I think Republicans have an obligation. They certainly feel an obligation to the taxpayers to finish the session on time, to finish by the April 29th deadline, and they're certainly going to do that. Now, it was certainly hampered by the fact that the Democrats left town for a month. I mean, they have indicated they would have liked to be more involved in the process, and that was tough from Urbana. But I think Republicans have done the best job they can in the amount of time that they have, and I think dragging it out doesn't make sense. It's not a good thing for the voters. It's not a good thing for the taxpayers. So let's get it done. Let's get it done on time.
And I disagree with that. Here's why I disagree. First off, we had to have the congressional maps done by the end of the session. To draw the maps, now we had three sites. The Republicans took it, I think, to South Bend here in Indy, and they went to Bloomington for the southern part of the state. If we would take the maps as they're drawn and do it over the summer through a summer study committee and go to northwest Indiana, north central Indiana, and northeast Indiana, go to southwestern Indiana, go to south central Indiana, and southeastern Indiana, and do central in the east and west and central here around Indy, and let the people see what the maps are, and we could then report back to the General Assembly on September 1 to the Speaker and let him know what the people said, tweak the maps so that the people are involved in the process. If you remember at the beginning of the session, it was said that there was going to be transparency. And then you involve the citizens of the great state of Indiana in what we're doing, and ultimately they have the final say. We govern at the consent of the governed.
Sam Goldstein, I know we haven't forgotten you.
Unfortunately, Representative, you guys don't govern at the consent of the governed. You guys govern at the consent of the Republicans or Democrats that drew the map during the prior redistricting. If you look at competitiveness in the Indiana House and Senate races over the past 10, 15 years, how many races run with absolutely no competition from one of the old parties? A great proportion of them, there's no competition whatsoever. Historically, if you look in Marion County back 10 years ago, there was a major disagreement between the mayor and the city county council over who was going to redraw the city county council district maps. What happened? It got booted up to the Supreme Court of Indiana, and within a few days, the Supreme Court came back with what we consider very coherent district boundaries for the Marion County City County Council districts, and something like, correct me if I'm wrong, something like 40% of the council turned over that first election cycle, and it's been very competitive ever since. That's what we would like to see, fair and competitive districts where the old parties actually run somebody against each other and compete for every district in the state, because that's the only fair way to have representative government of the people by the people.
Well, let me say this.
Sure.
In the maps that were drawn 10 years ago before my time in the legislature, the maps that were drawn 10 years ago had 24 competitive districts, and what I call competitive is 47% to 53%, one way or the other, okay? They had 24. Under the Republican maps, they have 14 that we just drew for 2011. Under the Democratic maps that were drawn, there were 26 competitive districts.
Well, competitive doesn't equal fair. You know, competitive is one thing. Those maps were drawn by the Democrats to create the greatest possible advantage for Democrat members of the House. And for a good part of the decade, it worked. But Republicans are in control now. They have 60 seats. They won a lot of Democrat districts. You know, those maps were designed to deliver a Democrat majority in a state that leans Republican. I mean, competitive isn't necessarily fair. Dan Coats carried 84 out of 92 counties last year. So to actually create a competitive map isn't necessarily the most equitable way to divide the map. A truly fair map would generate more Republican seats. That's just simply the demographics of the state.
Go ahead.
I think it depends on what your definition of fair is. I mean, you know, that is a very fuzzy term that may or may not include competition. But ultimately, what these districts are drawn for are elections. And an election isn't really an election if there's only one candidate.
Absolutely.
And both sides are guilty of trying to game the system for their advantage. So ultimately, the solution is to change who draws the maps. It's past time to have an independent commission in place to do this for 2021. We know that, you know, interest in redistricting really is high immediately before and immediately after. So we've got a really small window of opportunity to pass legislation to create an independent redistricting commission. We hope the Republicans who said they were for it before the maps this year will remember that and come back next year and pass legislation to create it. This should be the last time the Indiana General Assembly draws the maps.
Is there an appetite, do you think, for that? You look back at some of the comments that Senate President Pro Tem David Long, Republican leader in the Senate, and Brian Bosma, Republican House Speaker, they in the past, you know, last year, year prior, had talked about moving toward this sort of setup that Julia Vaughn has just described. Is there going to be an appetite now that the victors have effectively gotten the spoils, and do they still want to go that direction?
I certainly hope so. I think you've seen a major step forward in terms of, you know, the process and the way the lines were drawn from 10 years ago. I think Congressman Rakita, then Secretary Rakita, laid out a plan for a much better redistricting process. And I think Republicans have made a step in that direction. Whether or not there's the appetite to go forward is yet to be determined. I'd like to see us do that. But again, you know, bipartisan support is going to be important on that, because the day will come when Democrats are in charge of things again. And politics is cyclical. So really, it's going to take both parties. Republicans, yes, they're in charge today. But I think it's going to take Democrats willing to say, yes, we'll be in charge again someday, but we're willing to go this route anyway.
Real quick with Todd Rakita, since he ran his primary campaign, you know, he's one person who, an incumbent who basically was drawn out of his own district, the 4th District. And there were a lot of Republicans, of course, that were frustrated with his push for redistricting reform. Is this a message that was sent to your former candidate?
You know, I don't know. I think there are probably some in the Republican Senate that would not mind tweaking the congressman a little bit, but he lives literally a nine iron from Hendricks County. He's right on the Marion County, Hendricks County line, and he said, you know, county lines and communities of interest are important in this process. So, you know, he's willing to move, and he said he would, and that's certainly something he's known was possible all along. So I think it's a small price to pay in his mind for a much better process.
And it's all, by all indications, these bills, these maps will be going to the governor's. Just some formalities basically stand between us and that happening. What's to stop them? Litigation? I mean, there are suggestions that their Voting Rights Act's problems here in terms of minority representation. Do you see this ending up in court, John Bartlett?
It's a possibility. I don't want to say yay or nay right now. I'm not a lawyer. Around Allen County, I think there was some problems there, definitely some problems in Allen County.
And Sam Goldstein, would you?
I could not imagine a bigger waste of the taxpayers' money then, well, actually I could, because there are quite a few going on now, but to litigate something like this that is basically the spoils of war every 10 years the Attorney General would have to defend a case like that, and it would go on forever, and probably it would be decided in favor of the Republicans because they're the one that wants to make the rules.
All right.
Well, it would be an inordinate waste of money.
We could go on forever, too, I have a sense, but unfortunately we're out of time. I thank you for being here for this important discussion. My guests have been Democratic Representative John Bartlett of Indianapolis, Republican political consultant Cam Savage of the Limestone Group, Julia Vaughn, Policy Director for Common Cause Indiana, and Sam Goldstein, Chairman of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, caucus leaders join us to look at the mad dash to the end of the 2011 session. To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, is there anything that would stop these maps from getting the signature of the governor? This is on rails, right?
Flood or famine, there's no reason that the governor would not sign these maps.
And why is it that Republicans flatly rejected the call to slow down the process, you know, go ahead and do the congressional maps, but let's wait till, say, organization day to do the others? What would have been the loss there for Republicans?
Well, they've got the votes. There's really no need to necessarily slow things down, you know, even though Julia was talking in the roundtable about that. But I think people accept the fact that these maps have been drawn at least incumbent blind. We saw that when some incumbents were literally blindsided by the maps. And there's no real reason not to do it now, although you could come up with any number of excuses for delaying this until organization day. And, you know, you might even have some good arguments for doing that, but there's no real reason to stop the process today.
Okay, so let's push the current maps off the table, and let's look to the future, because there will undoubtedly be a call for an independent commission or some sort of citizen panel that would do this, that would be devoid of any political influence. Even if you do that, though, how do you start a process like this? I mean, do you start with townships? Do you start with counties? Do you start with schools? I mean, how do you do it?
That's a big question, and it's not a political question so much as it is just a values question. And I think that if you asked Julia Vaughn, she would probably say, well, you ought to have some hearings around the state to see what people want in these districts. And there are some real decisions that have to be made at the outset if you're going to do something like that. For example, is it better to split a county among several legislators rather than just have one legislator, if that's possible? Do you get more representation if you have more votes in the General Assembly, or do you have better representation, more accountable representation, if you have just one person representing the county? For example, Luke Kenley from Noblesville represents a district that goes all the way up to the northern part of Grant County in Marion. And I think the people of Marion have appreciated the fact that they've got the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee representing them, and they would not under these new maps. But by the same token, some people in Grant County may say, well, we want somebody from Grant County, somebody with our values of our community, as opposed to some guy from Noblesville and Hamilton County, regardless of how powerful that person might be. So values judgments need to be made at the outset on any kind of independent commission.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, Ed, for your insights. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.